Welcome to the B-side, episode number 22. It's April 7th, 2014. I'm Rhoda Brooks, and with me is Stephen Croker.
Hey.
Tyler Crawford.
Hello.
Who is mocking the way I say welcome to the B-side as I say it.
Rhoda, you're painting this caricature of me that I tend to make fun, and that hurts my feelings.
Yeah.
I was encouraging you.
It's my job.
I was here giving her the thumbs up, trying to high-five her. She was leaving me hanging.
Now you're just lying.
That in fact is true.
Oh, man. Welcome, everybody, joining our little table talk here. And we got some good questions today. But first of all, we want to say a big thank you to everyone who supported the garage sale this last weekend. It was pretty crazy. Over $3,200 raised at a garage sale.
How much higher than that is, like, previous?
Like, quite a bit. Yeah. Like, at least a grand, probably.
Like,
$2,000? Yeah. Yeah, so it's really... really awesome. Really, and it was generous. Really, we had lots of people told their family and friends, which we really appreciate, because we had lots of people from the community came by and we had good conversations, and it was fun. It was, you know, good.
You were telling stories before, and like, garage sales bring out a certain type.
Oh yeah.
They bring out a mix. It's not just, like, there's some interesting. Yeah, they bring out a mix of individuals.
Some characters.
Yeah.
There is garage sale people, mm-hmm. and then there's people who go to garage sales. Like, I might be a person who will go to a garage sale.
Yeah.
But I am not.
Yeah. I like a good deal.
Yeah, I am not a garage sale person. Like, these are the people who are like...
professional.
What? No early birds!
Yeah.
Like, up at 6:30, like, want to... like, you know, they know what they're looking for.
Well, I'm so not an early person on the weekends anyway. And so, like, Paul said, like, Paul Papworth, I mean, he's run a bunch of these. And so, I guess, in the past, we started them at, like, 8 and run them later. And this year, he's like, no, 7:30 to 12:30. By 12:30, you're not getting any business worth hang around for after that. And like, I'm like 7:30, so of course they had people lined up at 7:15 to come in and get, and you know what, good on them, they helped us out, they supported a cause.
You make, I ran six of them in my last church, and we would do 8 to 12, so same kind of deal.
Yeah.
And we would find that we would make, I would guess we made 70% of our money in the first hour and a half.
Yeah. Except you need the last hour, because Paul did this thing where we're gonna eat, we did like the last hour 11:30 to 12:30, a bag for $1 or a box full for $2.
Yep.
And I'm thinking, wow, it's such a dip. But like, at that point, they're helping you move the stuff out.
Yeah. Yeah, you just want to get rid of stuff. And we did it. We even took
and all that, like,
for the last 5 minutes or like last or after, like between like the end and the like 15 minutes after, we would just say, take whatever you want. Like, it's 12:30. We're done. Like, just.
Yeah. Well, at first, like, being the novice of garage sellers that I am, and it's like, I'm like, wow, like, how do we make money that way? But then you realize that the people who come in the morning, who there's things that they want, they will pay the price. It's still a good deal anyway. It's a garage sale.
Yeah.
They'll pay for what they want for the things they want.
Did you happen to see there's a blue cooler with a white lid? Did it sell?
Why, was it not for sale and it was just left here?
No, because my parents donated that cooler to the garage sale 2 years ago, and it didn't sell, and they were going to give it away. So I'm like,
oh,
I'll take it back.
Oh,
and it's been sitting in my garage for 2 years. And then we donated it to the garage sale again.
Hilarious.
I understand how many garage sales it could go through.
Did my bookshelf sell?
I don't know. There was some. I wasn't in the gym. I was at the collectibles.
I thought you were like tracking.
That was a good idea.
No, tracking the like five. Like, we made $3,200 selling a lot of things for $2. Do you know how much stuff that is?
It's about 1,600 items.
It's crazy. It's crazy.
It's just simple math.
Let me call my son. He can do the math first.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was crazy.
So you're saying
unless you're related to me, and then
Noah's very
like my family comes in at like before the $2 sale starts, and we're Brooks's, so they're talking, so they came in way before that. They're talking away to people, and then the sale starts of like a box for $2 or a bag for $1. But I know they've been holding this stuff around for like, well, they're chatting and everything. They come up to me and they're like, how much for this? And I'm like, $10. family rate.
When I did
rate.
Sales, we had people that we actually had on patrol making sure people weren't stashing
and
hoarding, because like, they would know they got a use
for the
garage
sale
happened every year. And they would like fill boxes and try to hide them under tables.
It's so incredible.
That, yeah, it blew my mind. So then we would like...
It's like fundraising for Cambodia.
Walking around with a handheld mic the whole day. Which is like, that's trouble in and of itself. Me with an unfettered microphone for 4 hours.
Let's amplify all your thoughts.
Yeah, exactly. It's trouble. I'm sure people in the podcast are like, yep, yeah, that sounds like it'd be dangerous. But, so I would like call people out and be like, excuse me, sir, what are you doing with that box?
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
And just like, Nothing. Oh, I'm just shopping. And I'd be like, hurry up, go pay. We need your money now. I just was ruthless. It was awesome. It was a lot of fun. Though. That's the thing about those garage sales. They're a lot of work, but there's a really great relational component where you rub shoulders with the community in a way that you might not otherwise. And you always get this cross-section of people from your own congregation that come and help.
Mm-hmm.
I found that with ours, the one we did, it was a youth one, but I would have tons of different parents or families or even seniors who just loved and supported the youth ministry and liked helping with the sale, and they'd done it for 15 years when their kids were in it. It was great.
Yeah, it was good. And we had, for me, it was kind of fun because on Facebook I'm posting about the event coming up, and I had several friends of mine who are not church-going friends who came out. Just, they wouldn't maybe have come out, but they came out because I put it on Facebook and they wanted to support things, and been really good about that, so it's fun. But so we were having a garage sale. You were moving. We should have just like gone to Steve's house and like taken the boxes from the garage sale and kind of like kept filling your garage. You probably
could have done the same line because we were doing carpet.
Wait a minute.
I was kind of hoping you'd actually have another garage sale because now that you it's like after you move in when you're like I have one too many chairs. It's like when you're setting up your house, you think you have room and then you're like nope. So I could have another garage sale.
Yeah. Oh,
actually, what I
Ray
want
and I
is
said the same thing on Saturday after we finished putting. We had our carpet finished installed. All our furniture back, and we're like, you know what? We moved a lot of stuff to our basement so that we didn't have to move it. And now I don't think we need to bring it back upstairs.
Like, I want another junk on the curb day. That was really poor timing because there's now we got the new house, and there's
you have to wait a year.
Extra junk just kicking around. Like, they just had junk kicking around the backyard. Like,
really?
Yeah, here's like a, you know, some of it's actually decent. Like, there's a tire. I'm going to keep the tire and make a tire swing, but like, they had just, I don't know, like extra compost buckets and like this storage thing. Just, there's just like stuff in the backyard that I want to just throw it on the curb. Like welcome mats, like all sorts of just junk.
Hmm.
It's just, so I'm like, I got to wait 51 weeks.
I find it interesting when people leave
junk on the curb day.
It was a busy, weekend, I think, for all of us. We're all doing a lot of physical stuff, and then you get through Sunday and you're like, oh. And the weekend's gone. But it was good. It was a big, full of a lot of blessings, so that was good. And the sermon on Sunday was great. And I wanted to pick up on a couple of things from your sermon on Sunday. In your sermon, you pointed out the danger of mindlessly consuming media because it can shape us. And the same with what and who we surround ourselves with. So I have a couple of questions in there. One is, makes sense. We're focusing on these things that they influence us and they can change us. But I'm pretty sure that you're not referring to that then we should all of a sudden become in this Christian bubble where, like, all we listen to is
Michael Louis Smith.
Yeah, all we listen to is Michael Louis Smith. We don't have Christian friends. We don't invite non-Christians over. We don't, like, because then I think there's a danger in swinging. Well, I see the danger on both sides. You have Christians who swing to the side of bubbling themselves off because they don't want to be contaminated. And then you have Christians who they take the missional statement so far as to participate, and there's nothing that distinguishes them from anything else. So how do you kind of find the balance? Isn't the right word. How do you determine healthy boundaries for stuff like that, whether it being TV or relationships or how you spend your time?
I think the bubble, I commend the people for the bubble in that they are trying to guard their hearts. So it's great. I think that's, they're being wise. They're going, there's things I just don't want to participate in. However, they generally are making, generally speaking, bad missionaries. Like if they're not engaged with their neighbors, sharing lives with people, if they're not aware of what's going on culturally, I think it hurts their ability to engage as missionaries in a culture, right?
Because even Jesus, when he, like, he sat with the sinners and tax collectors, you know, like,
and
the religious people were like, do you know who you're sitting with? And that, like, so how do you not become a Pharisee type life, you know? Like,
I think that's a rare problem, honestly. Mm-hmm. I think there maybe was generations where all the Christians just hid from culture. I don't really see a lot of people doing that. I don't know a lot of people where I'm like, you need to be more aware of what's going on. I do see a lot of people who are just mindlessly consuming whatever comes their way without thought or critical thinking, and they're just imitating culture. And they're probably not even sharing, like, they're not even bringing Christ into it. They're just entertaining themselves, numbing themselves with whatever's on TV.
And they're separating the different parts of their life. So Christ is like a Sunday, you know. And
so I think if the and to be a good missionary, I don't think you need to just, you don't have to watch everything on TV. You don't, there are things that simply being aware of them are not going to help you. There are movies that you don't need to watch. Yeah, maybe you need to be aware of what the trends of culture, but you also don't need to experience all that stuff firsthand to know what's going on. You know, I don't have to
watch pornography to know that it's dangerous for your marriage.
I can read a couple stats and know how prevalent it is. I don't have to experience it to get like the firsthand taste and go, oh, this is just, you know. So you don't have to consume everything to be a good missionary. And I doubt that's what people are motivated by. I don't think our church is packed full of people who are committed to engaging the culture thoughtfully. So therefore, they're watching TV. They're just watching TV, consuming whatever comes their way.
Well, and I think one of the things that, you know, the Christian church in the last, well, I'm sure it's gone on longer, but at least the last 50 years has created a dualism where we have the secular and the sacred, and we've attached it to our music, to our media, to our movies, to a lot of different things that, you want to buy from the Christian realtor. That's who you want to use instead of the secular one. And so we've kind of made like there's music, there's God-honoring music. That's Michael W. Smith, it's the Newsboys, it's Matt Redman or whoever, like the Christian artists under the Christian label. And then there's the pagan idol worship music that if you like, you know, you're going to go to hell or whatever, the Coldplay, the U2, you know, or whatever. Like that we've created this divide to say this belongs in this category, this belongs in the other, which on one hand makes things a lot easier. This is good, this is bad, this is what I focus on. But the reality is we recognize that most of us live in the gap and we have to be discerning and to go like, is it may be permissible, but is it beneficial, right? Yeah. Like, is it helping me understand culture better? Is it causing me to sin? You know, like, movies with gratuitous language I find offensive. I try to avoid them. And, like, I find that that means most of these new, like, I love comedies for me. Mm-hmm. Like I love the Billy Madison movies.
It's hard to get a good.
Yeah, and I always tell teenagers these days, because I work with them, they don't know what it's like to have good, funny comedy. It's harder to be funny now because it's just shock humor, right? So it's worse and worse. But, you know, I look at the movies that came out when, well, when Steve and I were in high school. Rhoda would have been, you know, in her early 30s. just kidding. But like Billy Madison and Dumb and Dumber. Not that they're, I'm not holding them up as models of virtue in movies. But
or quality filmmaking.
Right? But they're some of my favorite movies. I think they're hilarious. They're not necessarily always appropriate or God-centered. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying as far as a cleanliness level, there's not nudity. There's hardly any language. Mm-hmm. But now you watch some of these new ones. I've seen a couple of them, and I just can't even stomach them. Like it's just like every other word. They're obscenity-filled, nudity-filled. It's too much.
That's what makes it funny.
That's a good question, though. Like, is it helpful? Permissible? Yeah. There's nothing biblically saying you shouldn't have a television, but is it helpful? And I think the biggest thing is we need to be thoughtful and critical in what we consume, whereas I think so many people are just mindless. They're just looking for something to momentarily entertain them that night. So what's on TV versus being actually thoughtful and saying, asking questions like, is this helpful? Is this helping me? Is it hurting me? And then even when you watch a movie, watch a television show, read a book, any sort of story, any sort of thing, asking, how does this fit with the biblical worldview? There'll be elements where you can go, yeah, this actually is a good illustration. It could be a secular movie, but you go, hey, this is actually a good illustration of something that's true in the scripture. Maybe this is showing the sinful heart of man. Maybe it's showing the problems of addiction or something. You know, whatever it could be in a film or like the hero saves the day and you go, hey, this kind of fits with a biblical story here. I can see where, and what is it that stands in contrast? Hey, they were teaching something there that actually goes right against what God's word is. So now we're actually thinking critically. We watched a film and we're asking, how does that story line up with God's big story? And how does it actually, how is it a counter false story against God's big story? Now that type of thing, now you're not just letting a film shape your worldview. You're actually watching and thinking through it critically where you you're evaluating it, and it's not changing you.
Yeah, we had a friend and I, a couple friends, had an exercise in Bible college. We kind of, it was half joking, but we often would, we'd end up having really good conversations. If we'd watch a movie, we'd ask, who was the Christ figure? Who was the one providing redemption or salvation through whatever means? And it was amazing when you started talking about it and thinking through that lens with that kind of idea in your mind watching movies. You saw these caricatures of redemption and salvation, not necessarily God-centered salvation, but in the sense of, you know,
but the human are always trying to create that. We're always trying to recreate that.
And you started to be able to see it quite clearly, quite easily. I remember watching About a Boy with, I think we've talked about this maybe, with Hugh Grant.
Yeah.
And going like, that.
I love that movie.
That boy was the Christ figure in his life, the little boy, right? Like, and you could see it because his life changed. It turned around. He had purpose. And it's just amazing.
What's interesting, you were talking about like mindlessly consuming versus critically consuming, and when you and I were talking earlier, we were talking about like things like Grammys or different award shows, and because I know several like youth pastors and who will watch them and then write blogs about like, because they need to know what the kids are consuming and what they're being fed, and then but they, when they watch it, they're not going, oh, I need to be hip with my kids, so I will just sit and consume what they consume, as in just taking it in so that I'm popular. They're watching it so that they can have Christ-centered conversations about what the kids are being fed all the time. So they're not going, oh, well, I'm not going to watch that. They sit there and they'll write blogs and going, okay, so here are the messages that were delivered to your kids and their friends. And here, and so that they can actually, they're critically watching it so that they can have those conversations, you know? And I really feel too, like, I feel like we need to have good Christian community around us, good Christian friends that we hold each other accountable. But I also believe in having non-Christian friends, people that you're invested in, and you're loving them, and you're showing, you're doing, trying to model after what Christ was doing. But that doesn't mean because you're investing in people's lives that are unbelievers that you have to participate in everything that they participate in. So I have some really close friends, and we, there's certain activities or clubs or things that we belong to together, and then there's certain things they have other friends that they go to that they wouldn't even dream of asking me to, because they know that I wouldn't be comfortable with that. Like, there's that understanding there. I'm not trying to be so hip with them that I'm going off to certain kinds of parties or watching certain, they all get together to watch certain shows and
sometimes are abstaining from things as Christians in culture with our non-Christian friends provokes thought and understanding. I still remember at 19, home from college with some friends and a bunch of buddies, and they wanted to go to a gentleman's club, this group of guys. And I just was like, nope, if that's what you guys are going to do, I'm going to go home. I'm not going. And they pressed and pressed. And so finally they ended up going. I ended up going home. But three of these guys later were like, why didn't you go? Like, what was it? And so, oh, you're just some kind of fortune of virtue trying to like show how good you are. I was like, no, it's just, and I gave my reasons, and it provoked a really interesting conversation that definitely wouldn't have happened had I gone, but definitely wouldn't have happened had I, oh, I just said that, definitely wouldn't happen.
But see, that's the key, is like, if we, I feel as Christians, we're so,
a different message.
Yeah, and that's a very, I mean, the example I just gave, it's a very easy choice to make for a Christian. Like, I know that I'm not going to go to a strip club. Like, that's just, I know that's not something I'm going to engage in no matter who I'm with. But as an example of like, in our, we were 19, 20, whatever, 21 years old, that was normal. That was something that these young guys wanted to do together and thought it would be a good time.
It's like a rite of passage.
Yeah, and I just didn't want to go.
Well, and I think what you hit on there too is like, it's, it sends a different message. Like, even now with the friends I have now, like, when I don't participate in different things, or they also don't, they know I've invested enough in the relationship, in the friendship, where I've been there for them. We do spend quality time together. So that when I do make decisions, they know that I'm not saying I'm better, I'm a goody two-shoes, and I'm better than you, and how could you do that? They understand we have different worldviews on that, and I have a different set of beliefs. But because of that, I'm able to have other conversations that if I didn't separate anything, and I'm not trying to say that I'm perfect and get all that, but like, if I didn't set any of those boundaries up, they wouldn't even look to me for those other conversations.
Yeah.
You know, they wouldn't even come to me and say that, because it, it would just be a cultural thing I did, not an actual deep down belief thing that I did.
I think we, an element of Christianity that has been really downplayed recently has been, there's this, I think we've forgotten or lost the call to be different. Mm-hmm. Like, in this idea of fitting in, making friends, you know, like friendship evangelism and all these, whether it's a noble pursuit or whether it's just a disguise, there is this element of Christian faith that is called to stand out, mm-hmm. to be a city on a hill, mm-hmm. to look different, a light in darkness. It means there are things in our culture that we can never engage in, and we may take flack on it, and that's exactly what God wants us to do.
I think there's battles that we'll never win. I think Rhoda and I were talking about that this morning, mm-hmm. this graham cracker commercial and inclusivity and talking about some of the same-sex issues. You know, I don't think that's an issue as a church that we're going to win, and I don't think that's an issue that I think we've learned from watching media reports and stuff in the last year, no matter how gracefully you speak against something like that, particularly same-sex issues, you're going to catch flack. You look at the way Rick Warren did it. You look at the way, well, Phil Robertson was a bit graphic in how he described things. But when you say, I don't believe this is right, you are putting a bullseye on yourself. And I think that's what God wants. Mm-hmm. I don't think he wants us to conform to the culture. But I also think he wants us to maintain the balance of being loving and yep. graceful and godly and loving, you know, loving our neighbor as ourselves and teaching the gospel, preaching the gospel. But at the same time, you know, being tolerant without acceptant necessarily of the.
I think this is weird for us when there's these situations where we are called to stand exactly in opposite position, whether behaviorally or in a view on something with all of the culture. It's a new position for us.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. In the West.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
In other places in the country.
Yeah, but that's the
West.
Point.
Yeah.
So for us, this is weird, but yet God has always called the Christian church to stand in contrast on key points to the culture. But around the world, this is not weird.
Yeah.
You try being a Christian in a Muslim country, your life is at risk, and you will look different. So most of our brothers and sisters around the world have to stand against their culture on key points. And here, when we stand against our culture on certain issues, like, I'm not going to watch this, or I don't believe that something like same-sex marriage, and we're going to get, what, made fun of? Or labeled?
Or worse, you just told
labeled
that
a bully?
Hate, yeah.
Or intolerant.
But really, is that the worst?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And there's Christians who are going to change their view, abandon the scriptures because of that, when people are losing their life on the divinity of Christ. Yeah. You know, like, it's such a minor thing.
And I'm fully convinced that guys like you and I, Steve, will, within the next decade or two, will be put to a choice by our government that we'll lose our license to officiate weddings unless we agree to...
It's fine, take it.
But that's the point, right? Like, they'll come down and the pressure will continue to... It's more of a social pressure we face here, right? Like, yeah. It's not... chances are you're not going to lose your life over gracefully disagreeing on issues of
you'll lose your popularity.
But you'll lose your popularity. You and guys like us might lose our recognition, our clergy housing allowance, those kind of things.
Justice of the Peace is already lost. They can't. They basically, Canada, if you're a Justice of the Peace, you can't refuse to marry someone.
Right.
Because that, or like you have to agree
yeah.
to
so
marry.
So we're still standing
license.
On the leg of religious equality and rights, and they're outranked. But I see a day where it's going to change.
But when a freedom of religion conflicts with another freedom, freedom of religion always loses.
Yeah.
Like when two freedoms mm-hmm. conflict,
yeah.
that wasn't always the case, but now like freedom of speech or freedom of like an individual's choice trumps our freedom of religion.
Which I was having this conversation
with Christians.
The girls I mentor on the Cambodia team. As we're reading, our last Cambodia team meeting, we were doing worldviews, religions, breakdown, but it was talking about... we were talking about truth, right? And those who are seeking truth. And basically what truth cannot be based on. Like, it can't be based on how you feel or what. Like, all these things that are non-qualifiers, like, that can't influence. Like, truth is something that just is. regardless of anything else. And how we come from such a culture where, like, you just let everybody have their own truth. Let everybody have their own. And, like, so that's fine until they start intersecting with one another. And then how does that work?
Yeah.
You know, like.
Well, and that's the point we're at right now, right? Yeah. Like, well, because it's, you know, it's.
What was the question?
Yeah, I don't know. That was good.
It was a rabbit trail. I think we started talking about how do we decide what we should watch.
Discernment. Should, discernment.
And I just.
Be thoughtful.
I just took a hard right. And went down the same-sex debate issue again.
Which we could get into the work.
And you guys think, and everyone thinks Rhoda controls the podcast. It's all me.
Yeah, I'm just a front.
Kidding. I'm just a front. I'm a puppet.
Well, here's a... okay, so on that note, we had a question that came up. So it could tie to this. Is gambling a sin? Talking about discernment here now, is gambling...
I bet you $10 it isn't.
Anyway, send your wagers into the
B side. I'll give you 2-1 odds. I'm gonna go sin is the heavy favorite. Nonsense the underdog. I'm betting the underdog. Sorry. Listen to too much sports talk radio.
Yeah. So what about gambling? Because there's lots of different, like, there's, you know, you look at the people who are addicted to gambling, or the whole Las Vegas scene or casino scene or whatever. And then you've got, like, your hospital raffles, and you've got your fundraiser raffle. Like, yeah. You've got your hockey 50-50s, you know, like, and people try to differentiate, like, is it a blanket sin? Are some things permissible? Okay, where does that, like, is it a sin within itself? And so
some people really struggle with the thought of any gambling.
Yeah.
You know,
it reminds me of other conversations, like alcohol or no alcohol together, and those kind of conversations.
I always struggle when we label something a sin that the Bible doesn't call a sin. Like, is something sinful because the Bible calls it sinful, or is it sinful because it just goes against my upbringing or something like that? You know, like, we have to make sure that the scriptures are our standard force. Now, that being said, sometimes... we're always finding new ways to sin.
Yeah.
Pornography is not actually by name mentioned. Gambling isn't by name mentioned in the New Testament. But, so I would say, here's what I think I'm going to say. Gambling is not a sin in and of itself as such, and yet it is connected to so many other sins. Potential sin, right? So gambling is not a sin, but idolatry, a love of money, is explicitly called a sin. So what is your motive? If so often, like, what, 90% of the time, making up random stats, I'm guessing a strong majority of the time, the reason people gamble is because they're hoping against hope, to get rich. And that innate compulsive desire for riches,
and they're looking for the thrill of that.
That's idolatry. Yeah. So it's addictive and destructive. It's bad stewardship often. Like, if you, because so often gambling isn't just, I'm going to go and play, put money on one race, one bet, one thing, but it actually becomes a horribly addictive lifestyle, a huge burn on society, like huge
damages impact. Those around you.
So it's often really bad stewardship. It's often really bad. Motives, idolatry. It's often very destructive. It's often looking for a joy and thrill that ought to be sought elsewhere. So I'm going to say that gambling isn't necessarily in every case de facto always a sin.
Like, if you go to a fundraiser and you're going to give the money anyway, and you're not looking for anything in return, and they're doing certain things, and you put that in, are you committing it?
I would say it's not. Yeah. So I would say even like... So I'm going to get – so the act is not, but the motive could be.
Right.
So you play the 50-50 at the hockey game. Are you donating to the local minor hockey?
Is your kid's hockey team you're putting it in?
Or is your motive, I'm going to get rich and it's going to change my life? I would say that motive, I want to get rich and change my life, is actually a sinful motive, because you're trying to – it's an idolatry of wealth. So –
See, yeah, like, Ray and I have gone back and forth on that one. My wife's name's Ray, for the record. In case you're listening, you don't know who I'm talking about.
Your buddy Ray.
Yeah. My buddy Ray and I talk about. But, like, you know, we haven't recently, but in the last number of years, a couple of times at least, we've bought a ticket on one of the prize homes in our area. And usually they go to support the Peace Arch Hospital or somewhere like that. And we always kind of go, well...
And that's where your wife works, right?
No, she works at Surrey Memorial. Oh, okay. But we kind of go, well, at the end of the day, if it's $100 or something, like, we're happy to give $100 to the hospital. Mm-hmm. And if we happen to win a house, outstanding. But we're not going like, oh, we must have this house. Let's try and pay $100 for it. But right? Like it's, but I think it's a balance, and I think that's what Steve talked. I think gambling is one of those ones where you, that might be one of the gray areas, but that it you really, if you actually feel like you want to gamble, quote unquote, with a pure heart, it's hard. Like it's hard because it's so tightly tied. Like I would agree with you and what you said 100%. I would just say like it's. You know, it may not be any harder than saying drinking or.
Why do people want to gamble? That's the question.
Right. Well, because there can be a sport to it in the sense of a
sometimes
like you know. So if you're in like a fantasy hockey league, I've been in ones where you pay an entry fee and the winner gets some prize money, and I've been in ones where you haven't, and you just it's just for the just to see who wins. The ones where it's just to see who wins and there's nothing on the line, nobody cares. They just give up after week two. But in the ones where there's a little scratch on the line, guys are every week. Like I'm in one right now that like guys are to the end trying to win.
So some people play. You're playing poker or blackjack or something for money with your friends.
Yeah,
it's the thrill of the game and the stakes are up. But no one's playing slot machines because slot machines are fun.
Oh no, they're so boring.
It's so like poker is okay, but slot machines are sinful.
No, I'm just saying.
The Book of Steve, Chapter 3.
if the motive is money and the belief that you could get rich,
yeah,
it's probably both addictive, destructive, because it's actually not a means to wealth. It's generally not. I mean,
because you could the give house that money always to ends. Other. Yeah.
And it's probably an idolatrous, addictive, destructive behavior. Foolish. If you're gambling to get rich, yeah. You're very unwise.
I think it comes down to stewardship again, too. You're unwise. Right? Like, if I was going to a fundraiser for, like, I think where I already go, I'm invited by a friend, it's a fundraiser for a school thing, and I know I'm going to give so much money, that's, you know, like, I'm not looking to get anything back. But there's other opportunities come around where I'm like, well, am I expecting that that's what's going to provide for me? That's what's going to get me a hold. That's where my security is going to come from, or that where I will actually like this money should go to my family for X, Y, Z. But instead, if we just played it on here and we won, my family would have so much more money. And like, I'm like,
you're looking at a savior. You're looking for a savior. Yeah.
That's the difference. Whereas if the three of us after our podcast decided let's go to the River Rock and each play $60 worth of blackjack chips and have a good time and whatever, that's one thing. It's a totally another thing to go take our
that would be a little weird for us to do actually.
Yeah, I'm just saying that would be one category. It'd be a totally another category for Steve to say, you know what, like we just moved, rent went up, maybe I gotta try and double my paycheck, so why don't we go to the River Rock and put it on red. Right, okay, that would be sinful.
But I think isn't it the danger, like we're getting back to here again,
trade carefully.
The danger is you could then take what we're saying now and saying gambling in itself is not a sin, and you could take everything else we said and go, oh, okay, so I'm okay to do this or that, whereas for some people to even do that would be dangerous. But that's the same as like for me, like the alcohol thing. Like some people, alcohol is really dangerous. You know, like so some people will have a glass of wine with dinner. Personally, would I call that a sin? No, but then for other people, they can't enter into that without it being a problem.
Okay, and when you recognize, just statistically, not biblically, but statistically, how horribly addictive gambling is, you would be extremely wise, even if you go, it may not be sinful, it may not be sinful in this particular instance that you're thinking of, but to say, yeah, but it's not wise.
Yeah.
It's just not prudent to even gamble some. When you look at how addictive it is and how many lives it destroys, and some people will make the same case with alcohol. Mm-hmm. It may not be sinful, but it may not be wise to drink regularly or to drink ever. So some people will choose that. They're not saying it's sinful, but they're just going, I've seen enough destroyed lives that I don't really feel like it's just not going to bring the joy that I...
But where we actually have to be careful as Christians is sometimes we get into these battle of consciences. Jesus talks about this in Matthew 6, 8. I'm trying to think off where it was.
I don't know what you're talking about.
But in the sense of like where we have a battle of conscience and we look at someone who chooses to engage in an area that we've decided to say no from but would recognize as a gray area, and we actually put judgment on them. We judge the weaker, stronger brother argument. You're looking at me so blankly like you don't want
to think that about. Tyler might be making up a new Bible here on the podcast, but we're going to look at that.
I've preached on it.
This is getting better all the time. Steve's like,
It's been years, so it's not like a front of mind.
It's not
and
Matthew
I'm pretty
6.
Sure it was in Matthew.
But if you go to Romans.
I think you're thinking of Romans 14.
Yeah, with Paul talking about if this causes your brother to stumble, then yeah. Is that what you're thinking of?
Mm-hmm.
Well, like, that's if Romans the meat 14. To the idols is gospel. Not a sin, but if it causes someone else to sin, is that what you're thinking of?
No.
No.
You carry on. I'll find it and let you know.
All right. Well, I'm going to carry on. So in response, so now we're going to tangent to another great question
so
that
in
we
summary,
alluded to.
Hang on. In summary, gambling in summary. May not be sinful, but probably not wise.
And could lead
and
to a lot of sin.
Is connected to many, many sinful things.
Yeah.
It's very, 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 very often idolatrous, addictive, not God-glorifying, destructive, greedy, bad stewardship, foolish. So we're not saying you should gamble. I'm saying technically gambling in itself
could you make the statement?
Is gambling? Yeah. No, but there's a whole – it's like a spider web in this one part of the web, but it's touching all the other parts.
Mm-hmm.
So it's – anyway.
Yeah, good summary. Okay, so on to our next question, which I think ties in well to – this will be our last question for this morning – that ties in well to those other two things we talked about, and that is, can we sin in our dreams? You alluded to – we talked about this last podcast. You talked about it on Sunday morning a little bit. We had an interesting conversation before we started recording last podcast, so here we go. Do we think we can sin in our dreams? My thought is
– yeah.
Yes. I do. And it might sound weird because do I feel like we're always sitting in our dreams? No. But because I feel like sometimes you can manipulate your dreams. You know, like you're actually aware that you're dreaming and you can manipulate your dreams. And it talks in the Bible about, so you didn't commit adultery, but you had lustful thoughts towards that person. And therefore that was a sin. So I feel like maybe there's some dreams where we don't control it, but I know I've had dreams where I can actually go, I'm dreaming and now I don't want to do this and now I'm going to go over here. And so do I feel like we could sin in our dreams if we know we're having sinful thoughts in our dreams and we're permitting that? Then I think we could.
I guess the question, which I don't know the answer to, like scientifically, is do we control, like how responsible are we for what we dream?
Well, and then the other part that Tyler was talking about is even if you're not committing the act of sinning your dream, or maybe you refer both of you refer at different times. You have no need to know
idea,
what I said yet.
It was a good idea. It was probably mine.
Is that often your sins – so let's say you haven't – so let's say I'm dreaming about something and I haven't committed the sin of it, but it's come to my attention and it's – if I had done what was in my dream, it would have been sinful. Then I think it's revealing to me what I need to bring before the Lord and – give those thoughts back to him and ask him so that they don't become things that become sins. You know what I mean? Like it can reveal what maybe you've been focusing on or what's in your heart. So is it always sin? Maybe, maybe not. Can you manipulate it? Can you not? Are you consciously committing those acts in your dreams because you think it's safe to do so because as long as it's not in real life, then I think that would be sinful attitude of heart, right?
I think often what we dream about is what we've been focusing on. Like it's, you know, I dream about painting and moving because that's all I've been thinking about as far as the last week. So you often are dreaming about the things you're focusing your mind on all day. And so insofar as we control our thoughts during the day, maybe we are responsible because what we're dreaming about is what we already put in. How to get in your mind. You put it in. And then it rattles around and comes back in your dream, but you put it in there.
Maybe does
but not always. I don't.
Yeah, because sometimes things happen in your day that were things that happened to you, not necessarily things that you focused on or, you know, it was part of it, and then they become muddled up in your dreams.
People have nightmares because of things they've suffered.
Yeah, or just things that they've seen on TV. Like, there could be lots of different things. So I think that it's more a state of what is your heart at that time in your dream. Where's your heart in your mind? Like, and that's between, I think sometimes as Christians, we're all like, as long as I don't physically sin, I'm good. And God cares more about our hearts and our minds than what actually physically occurs sometimes.
Yeah, I mean, I think we absolutely can sin. I think oftentimes I think our dreams are so often a collection of the things that we consciously and unconsciously let into our brain. So sometimes you wake up from a dream and just go like, that was the weirdest dream I've ever had.
Mm-hmm.
Like, where it's just like, it's unexplainably bananas. Mm-hmm. I would guess that, like, can a thought, can an image come into our mind without us willfully allowing it to?
Well, I don't know. God gave people dreams.
True. But, you know, like, I remember talking specifically about this with a friend in college about dreams of a sexual nature, specifically, and going like, no, like, that's lustful thoughts. Like, God is not giving you those images that you're dreaming about in your dreams. We can't just absolve that. Like, those are thoughts and images that you've either captured, imagined, or allowed to kind of be stored in your, you know, brain hard drive, and nocturnally, like, recalled them for your benefit. So, I mean, I think there's a definite, I would say that, to me, there's a really strong case to say that we're accountable to what we put in our dreams.
Mm-hmm.
And it could be because of feelings of anger. They could be feelings of frustration. Yep. Like, I will say now, I know that I'm pretty sure that I've sinned in my dreams of times where I've been frustrated, right? Or, like, multiple levels. But I don't think that we have to then wake up and beat ourselves up and go, oh, no, I was hoping not to be that kind of person, and I am. I think those are the things where you wake up and you go, man, I need to take these before the throne. Like, I need to – they shouldn't be things that just – they should be things that convict us, but not to the point where we just sit around and feel bad about it. It's a healthy point to go – we seem to forget the next step of, like, we are in a living relationship, like a living God who wants to have relationship with us, who wants to have – and I think that's part of the problem we get again, where God becomes the God on Sundays or becomes the God we only go to in those times and not someone we actually come to daily and put our thoughts and everything back before him again and know that we need him, right? Not because you got your life so together. You're not that, thank like you. We talked about last time. I was looking at Tyler when I said that. But like the other week, we're talking about, oh my goodness, I just had a blank there.
It was Romans 14, by the way. That was the passage. You guys are right. Yeah. I don't know why I thought it was someone ago.
Aren't you scheduled to preach that?
No, I'm not feeling it. I might be. Maybe I'd be funny if I'm preaching that same passage again in the summer.
But
makes for an easy week of prep.
Just better be a good sermon. Yeah.
Sorry, I totally stole.
Here's a question. Okay.
Yeah.
Can you sin in someone else's dream? Because sometimes I do some pretty crazy things in Melissa's dreams.
Right. Yes.
And I'm like, that's not
me. Yeah. No.
Yeah. She's mad at you.
I am not responsible for what I do in other people's dreams. Yeah.
That's true. That's
your problem.
Yeah.
That's on you.
Like, whoa.
I usually try to be like, that means you like being mad at me. You're allowing yourself.
Doesn't I want to know why your wives are always mad at you in their dreams.
You don't know. I'm just going to put it this way. You live with someone for a number of years. You're going to see the good, the bad, and the ugly. And with us as men, there's probably more bad and ugly than there is good sometimes. Our poor wives.
All right. Well, we're going to wrap it up. We're going to wrap it up today. Thanks for these great questions.
You're welcome. Oh, you're talking to them. Sorry, I said.
And please send us in some more. bside@twossalliance.org. We look forward to connecting with you.
We should run a contest.
What?
We should run a podcast.
Like a raffle?
Like a podcast? Not
like a gamble, 50-50 a bet.
No. We should run a contest, and then, like, the winner gets to sit in on one of our podcasts.
Because they'd want
to
do that?
No, they get to pitch in. They get to share.
I think they'd be good. I think they'd be. I don't know if everybody would look at that as a prize. But anyway, so signing off for today.
Our 28 listeners, they'd be
thanks for joining us. See you next week. See ya.